Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Courier for Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. And I'm your reader, Peter Welch, and you are listening to IRIS, which is the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Shields gives $1 million to CFHS. Performance Center receives major boost. In Cedar Falls, fundraising efforts for the proposed multi-million dollar Tiger Performance Center received a major boost Tuesday. Shields Sporting Goods announced it is donating $1 million toward the project during Cedar Falls High School athletic fall kickoff. The Fargo, North Dakota-based company, has a location in Cedar Falls. Truly, this is a huge thing for our community, said Toby Thiessen, assistant store leader in Cedar Falls after the presentation. We are looking forward to what this will bring our student athletes. Our Shields Foundation fathers put a lot of money into this. In order for that to happen, our local associates had to raise a certain dollar amount. I've just been blown away by the support of our local associates, and tonight we got to present a check for $1 million. It was pretty special. We at Shields can't wait to see the progress of the Tiger Performance Center. It's the second major donation that the facility has received. Martin Brothers Distributing Kick started the fundraising efforts when it donated $750,000 in March. I think it's the missing piece for us to compete with anybody in the state. Cedar Falls Athletic Director Troy Becker said of the Performance Center, it benefits so many programs, from Project Lead the Way to robotics to band and athletics. It will be an amazing addition for us. With the way the climate is in Iowa, it will provide the opportunity to continue and to get better during a stretch of time when we normally would be idle. The Performance Center is one of two components added to the $80 million plus new high school being built north of West 27th Street and west of PE Center Drive. The other is a community pool facility. Together, they would add an estimated expense of more than $25 million to the high school project. Neither were part of the original scope for the high school. The proposed facility will be 47,000 square feet, and it was originally estimated to cost $7.5 million plus additional expenses for furnishings and equipment and fees and contingencies. That total had grown to $9 million by March. The multipurpose performance center would include turf, track, and hard surface courts. When both the new pool facility and performance center were announced, officials with Cedar Falls Community Schools expected supporters to raise a significant amount of the funds to pay for the facilities. With Shields' donation, $3.4 million has now been raised. Becker said fundraising efforts are nearing the critical $5 million mark. The pool facility has already hit its first benchmark, a much larger figure in the $10 to $15 million range. Hitting the first goal is a key part, Becker said. When we get to that mark, we can get approval, put our bids, and start building the structure, putting down the floor, putting up walls and a ceiling. The 38,500 square foot pool facility is slated for the northeast side of the building. The performance center would be on the southeast side, a transitional space between a new outdoor stadium and the school. The goal is to have both the swimming pool and performance center completed by the time the school opens in the fall of 2024. For more information on the Tiger Performance Center and Aquatic Center, visit the Cedar Falls Athletics website at cfschools.org. Click on Schools at the top and choose the high school from the drop-down menu. Athletics is one of the options that can be chosen on the left side of the screen. And in other news, Waterloo stray cat control plan fails. Council rejects spay and neuter proposal. In Waterloo, a pilot program to return roaming cats to the outdoors after they've been captured will not go forward. The 5-2 vote, the city council opposed a trial run of the proposed community cat program. Councilors Rob Nichols and Ray Fessus voted in favor. It would have been run by the Cedar Bend Humane Society and Animal Control Services. Free roaming cats taken into the shelter would have been spayed or neutered and given shots before being released back into the wild. The idea was to decrease the number of cats that go through the shelter and to lower the number of euthanasians. The trial would have reduced the cost that the city pays for each cat brought in the shelter from $55.62 to $52. Once in the shelter, the cats would have been ear-tipped to show that they'd been spayed and neutered and vaccinated against rabies. The ear tip would also have signified that the cat does not need to be brought back to the shelter. Councilor Dave Bozen brought up an Iowa law that states a person cannot release domestic animals into the wild. Sandy Greco, Traffic Operations Director, said city staff looked at the state code and thought it wouldn't be a problem. If people in a neighborhood did not want a roaming cat back in their area, Greco said the shelter would keep it. Bozen also noted that he's worried about the number of birds cats kill. Resident Forrest Delavo spoke up about the issue, saying outdoor cats have been a nuisance in his experience. Such cats defecated and urinated in his children's sandboxes when they were growing up, as well as in his wife's garden beds, which would potentially give her health issues. If I trap them again, I'll probably take them somewhere else, Delavo said. Greco noted that the program would reduce the number of cats in the community by spaying and neutering them. They can't reproduce, but they wreak havoc with flower beds and cars, Bozen said. I'm not in favor. After the idea was struck down, Greco said that Animal Services and the Humane Society may possibly look at the idea again, but she wasn't certain. In other words, in other businesses, landing fees are now waived for American Airlines planes that have more than 65 seats at the Waterloo Regional Airport. Airport Director Keith Kasperi said that this will encourage the airline to bring in larger airplanes. Currently, only 50 seat planes come through the facility. In other news, a public hearing will be set for the 6th of September to discuss amending the city's current sewer revenue capital loan program with a note to authorize a project through a state revolving fund. Mayor Quentin Hart said the fund offers low interest loans to help with projects. And in other news, the city approved an agreement with Honeywell International, Inc., for developing its smart city strategic plan. Hart said that Honeywell will help officials find one or two strategies that the community is passionate about and then help the city find grants and money to fund the projects. And in other news, in Cedar Falls, CF revives parking ramp talk, downtown parking fee part of any plan. In Cedar Falls, the idea of building a downtown parking ramp lives on in Cedar Falls. The city council voted 5-2 on Monday to explore the possibility, meant to address concerns of merchants and visitors who believe there is not enough spots downtown. Councilors Dave Sires and Susan DeBuer voted no. It's not the first time a downtown parking ramp has been proposed. A paid public parking system would probably be needed for a ramp to be viable. Ways to pay for construction and possible locations will be among the options presented to the council in the future. We're talking about a significant investment, probably $10+ million. So really, there's a number of things that the policymakers are going to have to weigh out before moving forward, said City Administrator Ron Gaines. Charging for parking downtown would ensure people use the ramp and don't flock to free spots. It also would finance ramp operations. If you were to build a ramp And if you would charge people to park there, why would they go there if they could park on the street for free? Said City Clerk Jacques Danielson. There would be need to some type of logistical review of the area to determine how far out you go to charge. Danielson projects that the council will be presented options sometime before the end of 2022. Any discussions of real estate acquisition would happen in closed session. A study to determine parking rates also might be necessary by discussing a ramp without knowing if the public supports paid parking. The cart was being put before the horse, DeBure said. Some business owners fear that parking fees will drive customers away. There's no point in building a ramp if there's not paid parking, she said. And now let's take a look at news in Washington. Biden signs huge climate health care bill. In Washington, President Joe Biden signed Democrats' landmark climate change and health care bill into law on Tuesday, delivering what he has called the final piece of his pared-down domestic agenda as he aims to boost his party's standing with voters less than 3 months before the midterm elections. The legislation includes the most substantial federal investment in history to fight climate change, some $375 billion over a decade. Another $64 billion would help 13 million people pay premiums over the next 3 years for privately bought health insurance by extending subsidies provided during the coronavirus pandemic. Medicare would gain the power to negotiate its costs for pharmaceuticals initially in 2026 for only 10 drugs. Medicare beneficiaries' out-of-pocket prescription costs would be limited to $2,000 annually. Starting in 2025 and beginning next year, beneficiaries would pay no more than $35 a month for insulin, the costly diabetes drug. The measure is paid for by new taxes on large companies and stepped-up IRS enforcement of wealthy individuals and entities, with additional funds going to reduce the federal deficit. In a triumphant signing event at the White House, Biden pointed to the law as proof that democracy, no matter how long or messy the process, can still deliver for voters in America, as he road-tested a line he will likely repeat later this fall ahead of the midterms. The American people won and the special interests lost. In this historic moment, Democrats sided with the American people, and every single Republican in the Congress sided with the special interests in this vote, Biden said, repeatedly seizing on the contrast between his party and the GOP. Every single one. The House on Friday approved the measure on a party line 220 to 207 vote, days after the VP Kamala Harris broke a 50-50 tie in the Senate. In normal times, getting those bills done would be a huge achievement. Senator Chuck Schumer, Majority Leader of New York, said during the White House ceremony, but to do it now, with only 50 Democratic votes in the Senate over an intransigent Republican minority, is nothing short of amazing. Biden signed the bill into law during a small ceremony in the state dining room of the White House, sandwiched between his return from a six-day beachside vacation in South Carolina and his departure for his home in Wilmington, Delaware. He plans to hold a larger celebration for the legislation on September 6th, once lawmakers return to Washington. The signing caps a spurt of legislative productivity for Biden in Congress, who in 3 months have approved legislation on veterans' benefits, the semiconductor industry, and gun checks for young buyers. The president and lawmakers also have responded to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and overwhelmingly supported NATO membership for Sweden and Finland. With Biden's approval rating lagging, Democrats are hoping that the string of successes will jumpstart their chances of maintaining control in Washington in the November midterms. The 79-year-old president aims to restore his own standing with voters as he contemplates a re-election bid. The White House announced Monday that it was going to deploy Biden and members of his cabinet on a Building a Better America tour to promote the recent victories. One of Biden's trips will be to Ohio, where he'll view the groundbreaking of a semiconductor plant that will benefit from the recent law to bolster production of such computer chips. He also will stop in Pennsylvania to promote his administration's plan for safer communities. Biden also plans to hold a cabinet meeting to discuss how to implement the new climate and health care law. Republicans say that the legislation's new business taxes will increase prices, worsening the nation's bout with its highest inflation since 1981. Though Democrats have labeled the measure the Inflation Reduction Act, a nonpartisan analyst said it will have a barely perceptible impact on prices. Senate Minority Whip John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, on Tuesday continued those same criticisms, although he acknowledged there would be benefit through extensions on tax credits for renewable energy projects like solar and wind. I think it's too much spending, too much taxing, and in my view, wrong priorities and a supercharged, supersized IRS that is going to be going after a lot of not just high-income taxpayers, but a lot of mid-income taxpayers, Thune said at a Chamber of Commerce event in Sioux Falls. The administration has disputed that anyone but high earners will face increased tax scrutiny, with Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen directing the tax agency to focus solely on business and people earning more than $400,000 per year for the new audits. The measure is a slimmed-down version of a plan Biden and his party unveiled last year that crashed after centrist Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, said that it was too costly. During the event, or the signing event, Biden addressed Manchin, who struck the critical deal with Schumer on the package last month, saying that, "Joe, I never had a doubt," as the crowd chuckled. Later, outside the White House, Manchin said that he has always maintained a friendly relationship with Biden, and it has never been personal between the two. Democrats are hailing the legislation as a once-in-a-generation investment in addressing the long-term effects of climate change. The law will direct spending, tax credits, and loans to bolster technology like solar panels, consumer efforts to improve home energy efficiency, emission-reducing equipment for coal and gas-powered power plants, and air pollution controls for farms, ports, and low-income communities. And let's now take a look at today in history. Today is Wednesday, August 17th, the 229th day of 2022, and there are 136 days left in the year. Today's highlight: on August 17th, 1982, the first commercially produced compact discs, a recording of ABBA's The Visitors, were pressed at a Philips factory near Hanover, West Virginia. On this date, in 1807, Robert Fulton's North River steamboat began heading up the Hudson River on its successful road trip between New York and Albany. In 1863, Federal batteries and ships began bombarding Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor during the Civil War, but the Confederates managed to hold on despite several days of pounding. In 1915, a mob in Cobb County, Georgia, lynched Jewish businessman Leo Frank, age 31, whose death sentence for the murder of 13-year-old Mary Fagan had been commuted to life imprisonment. Frank, who'd maintained his innocence, was pardoned by the state of Georgia in 1986. In 1945, the George Orwell novel Animal Farm, an allegorical satire of Soviet communism, was first published in London by Martin Secker in Warburg. In 1978, the first successful transatlantic balloon flight ended as Maxie Anderson, Ben Abruzzo, and Larry Newman landed their Double Eagle II outside Paris. In 1987, Rudolf Hess, the last member of Adolf Hitler's inner circle, died at Spandau prison at the age of 93 as an apparent suicide. In 1988, Pakistanian President Mohammad Zia-ul-Haq and U.S. Ambassador Arnold Raphael were killed in a mysterious plane crash. In 1998, President Bill Clinton gave grand jury testimony via closed-circuit television from the White House concerning his relationship with Monica Lewinsky. He then delivered a TV address in which he denied previously committing perjury, admitted his relationship with Lewinsky was wrong, and criticized Kenneth Starr's investigation. In 1999, more than 17,000 people were killed when a magnitude 7.4 earthquake struck Turkey. In 2004, at the Athens Games, Romania won its second straight Olympic gold medal in women's gymnastics, and the United States took silver with Russia winning the bronze. 2011, Vice President Joe Biden arrived in Beijing to meet with his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. In 2020, Texas joined New York, New Jersey, and California as states with at least 10,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths. About 80% of the Texas deaths were reported since June 1st, after the state embarked on one of the fastest reopenings in the country. 10 years ago, in Moscow, a judge sentenced three punk rock-style activists, members of the band Pussy Riot, to 2 years in prison for hooliganism for briefly taking over a cathedral in a raucous prayer for deliverance from Russian President Vladimir Putin. The court decision drew protests around the world. One of the three defendants was later released on probation. The other two were released several months short of their two-year sentence in December of 2013. 5 years ago, a van plowed through pedestrians along a packed promenade in the Spanish city of Barcelona, killing 13 people and injuring 120. A 14th victim died later from injuries. Another man was stabbed to death in a carjacking that night as the van driver made his getaway. And a woman died earlier the next day in a vehicle and knife attack in a nearby coastal town. Were shot dead by police. Two more died when a bomb workshop exploded. And finally, 1 year ago, in an effort to reassure world powers and fearful Afghans, the Taliban insisted that they would respect women's rights, forgive those who fought them, and ensure that Afghanistan would not become a haven for terrorists. And now let's go back to Cedar Falls. Gone to the Dogs. Doggy Dip takes over last day at the Falls. In Cedar Falls, the Falls Aquatic Center, 3025 South Main Street, closed the books on its season on Sunday. But on Monday, it was every pooch in the pool. The delightful tradition serves as an unofficial end to summer. Due to limited staffing, the Falls closed a week earlier than originally scheduled. To meet staffing requirements, the Aquatic Center must have at least 16 lifeguards on staff per day. With seasonal employees departing for school, activities, and a worker shortage affecting the economy as a whole, the Falls had trouble maintaining its staffing. But before they drained the pool, the Falls held the Doggy Dip on Monday night. The Aquatic Center annually invites every interested dog in the Cedar Valley and pet owners into the pool to help close out summer for good. Hundreds of dogs and their human companions pack the pool, playing with other dogs, leaping from the diving boards, and sliding down the water slides. The dogs were given free leash of the facility. Originally, the Doggy Dip was scheduled from 6 to 8 p.m. on the 22nd of August. And now let's go over to Cedar Falls here. Cedar Falls, to improve crosswalk visibility, council looks at safety concerns for walkers at 6th and State Streets. In Cedar Falls, drivers' visibility concerns at 6th and State Streets are pushing the city to better protect pedestrians Brian Heath, Operations and Maintenance Division Manager, committed Monday to making improvements to help those using the crosswalks at the intersection, the 6th Street corridor from Main to State Streets, was analyzed after the City Council approved Councilor Daryl Cruz's request in February to give it a closer look because of safety concerns. Engineer David Wickle presented information about the roadway during the council's committee meeting Monday and shared how future improvements could include bolder striping and a larger stop sign, as well as additional signage and markings. The First Street Bank building butts up against 6th Street from the south. It limits the visibility of drivers traveling east on the road when they reach the top sign and look to turn left or right onto State Street. Some 10 parking spots on the north side, used primarily by Cedar Falls Community Center patrons, also are an obstacle because the street cannot be widened or further removed from the bank property line. Councilors discussed whether to vote on a recommendation to assure the improvements are made pertaining to the 315 feet of roadway with a 25-mile-per-hour speed limit. However, Heath, who filled in as the Public Works Department head, doubled down on a promise to follow up on the improvements. It will be the intent of Public Works to do these improvements, not only what you see here, but we'll make sure that the ADA requirements are met in the sidewalks, and we'll put advanced signage coming from south to north on that sidewalk, Heath went on to say. Despite the discussion, the engineering division found that the street to be relatively safe because of data showing only 2 crashes reported there in the last 10 years. Neither resulted in injuries. No other safety concerns have been reported. And in some other news briefs, man allegedly threatens hospital staff with a knife. In Waterloo, a Waterloo man has been arrested for allegedly threatening hospital staff with a knife last week. Police arrested Jason Coyne Russell, age 41, of 919 Cogner Street, on Monday on a charge of assault on healthcare workers while displaying a weapon. A felony bond was set at $7,500. Police allege that on Thursday morning, Russell was carrying a fillet knife and threatened staff at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center at 3421 West 9th Street, telling them to get back. Officers found Russell walking in a grassy area off on San Marnin Drive. Police told him to drop the knife, and he told police, "Get back, you're going to get cut." Police used a taser to detain him. In Cedar Falls, alley reconstruction begins in Cedar Falls. In Cedar Falls this week, a contractor will close the alley running from 22nd Street to Searley Boulevard between Franklin and Clay Streets in order to work on reconstruction. In the meantime, garbage and yard waste collection will be moved onto the side roads, Franklin and Clay Streets, during what's estimated to be 6 to 8 weeks of closure. The time and day of pickup will not change. The city advises people to stay away from the construction zone, which will include heavy equipment, moving back and forth and behind the sidewalk on the property side. For additional information about the 2022 alley reconstruction project, go online to www.cedarfalls.com/1462/alley-reconstruction-project. To receive alley closure notices by email and or text message, go to www.cedarfalls.com/notify and follow the instructions for road construction as shown. Questions, concerns can be directed to Brett Armstrong, and you can reach him at 319-268-5161, or you can email Brett at armstrong@cedarfalls.com. You are listening to the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind, also known as IRIS. And this is Pete Welch, and I am your reader today, and we are reading The Courier. And let's now take a look at a few obituaries. Marion Hasty. Marion Hasty, age 90, of Cedar Falls, passed on Sunday, the 14th of August, at New Aldea Lifescapes in Cedar Falls. Funeral services will be 12:30 p.m. Saturday, the 20th of August, at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will be at Fairview Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Memorials may be directed to the American Cancer Society. Online condolences at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Della Wendell has passed at the age of 86 of Charles City on Sunday, August 14th, at the 9th Street Chautauqua Guest Home in Charles City. A private family graveside service will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. Hauser Weishar, that's W-E-I-S-H-A-R, Weishar Funeral Home, can be reached at 641-228-2323, and they're located at 1205 South Main Street, Charles City. And they're going to be in charge of all of the arrangements. Online condolences can also be left on the tribute wall for the family at www.hauserfuneralhome.com. Funeral home is FH, so it would be www.hauser.fh.com. Finally, Sonja Bast, age 84, has passed after complications stemming from being the age of 84. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home of Redland is assisting in the services, and the Bass family with arrangements. And you can reach them at 319-279-3551. And let's go back over to Waterloo. Backpack giveaway Thursday on through Saturday. Waterloo, the Cedar Valley JCs, will hold its annual backpack giveaway on two dates this week. Approximately 1,200 backpacks will be handed out 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Lafayette Park and 11 to 4 p.m. on Saturday at Sullivan Park. The backpacks will be filled with elementary school relevant supplies as part of the Cedar Valley Back to School Backpack Projects. The JC's sponsored program has been around for more than 25 years. A news release from the organization said it is rooted in the belief that all children deserve the opportunity to enter the school year with the supplies they need, to feel confident, proud, and comfortably ready to learn and excel. Backpacks will be filled with new supplies and are free to anybody who needs them, with no sign-up required. The backpacks will be handed out on a first-come, first-served basis. All 1,200 backpacks will be available on Thursday, with remaining quantities available at Sullivan Park on Thursday, or rather on Saturday, rather, excuse me. Food will also be provided by Hope City Church. Learn more about the JCs online at cedarvalleyjcs.org. In other Waterloo news, final man sentenced in Waterloo shooting. The last person has been sentenced in 2018 argument that left one person with a gunshot wound to the hip. Last week, Austin James Wood, age 23, was sentenced to up to 10 years in prison on a charge of intimidation with a weapon. Authorities allege that Wood was with a group who armed themselves with a .22 caliber rifle and a .25 caliber pistol when they went to accompany an acquaintance who was gathering belongings from an ex-girlfriend at a Langley Road apartment in March 2018, according to court records. A dispute broke out between those involved, and Abram Revis Oritz was shot in the hip. He was treated and released, according to police. The others charged in the incident were sentenced earlier. Nichols Charles Bish was sentenced to 10 years in prison on charges of intimidation with a weapon, willful injury causing bodily injury, and going armed in July 2019. Sean Lester Bish was sentenced to 5 years in prison, suspended to probation on charges of intimidation and carrying weapons in January 2020. In other news in Waterloo, paving completed on Grundy Road. A construction project 3 years in the works is finally completed. Paving is finished on a 5-mile stretch of Grundy Road from U.S. Highway 20 South to Zanetta Road that was previously gravel. Preliminary design work on the project started in 2019, and a final design was chosen in the summer of 2020. Actual construction started in spring of 2021 with the grading portion. Paving the graded roadway started earlier this summer. The entire project cost just more than $8 million. Grundy County and Black Hawk County split the cost evenly since the road is in both counties. From March to April in 2019, the county had placed 802.1 tons of rock on Grundy Road at a cost of $10,795. The cost included the rocks and contract truck drivers, but not the motor grader operators' labor hours. The increased graveling was due to busy traffic. The Department of Transportation said in the first mile of Grundy Road, there were 360 vehicles per day. A lot of these vehicles were agricultural. Along with pavement, driveway culverts were also placed with regraded ditches. The road's speed limit will be 55 miles per hour. Well, are you looking for a little bit of entertainment? Let's take a look at what's on television, what to watch on Wednesday. There is an original film by Netflix. It's called Look Both Ways. There's also another movie called Royal Teen, which is also an original film on Netflix. And then on NBC at 7 p.m., which is live, America's Got Talent. On Fox at 7 p.m., MasterChef Back to Win. The Smithsonian Channel at 7 p.m. has a program called Super Senses. And then Homicide Hunter, Never Give Up, Investigation on the Discovery Channel at 8 p.m. And then on TCM, beginning at 5 a.m., Catch a Classic, Summer Under the Stars, Spencer Tracy, in some of his best-known roles, such as The Old Man and the Sea, Keeper of the Flame, Adam's Rib, and Pat and Mike. Let's turn now to the nation and the world. Feds cancel $3.9 billion in ITT student debt. In Washington, students who used federal loans to attend ITT Technical Institute as far back as 2005 will automatically get the debt canceled after authorities found widespread and pervasive misrepresentation at the defunct for-profit college chain, the Biden administration announced on Tuesday. The action will cancel $3.9 billion in federal student debt for 208,000 borrowers. The Education Department said the debt is being forgiven using a federal rule known as borrower defense, which is meant to protect students from colleges that make false advertising claims or otherwise commit fraud. A similar action in June promised to erase $5.8 billion in debt related to Corinthian colleges, but it provided no answers on broader student debt cancellation. President Joe Biden supported debt cancellation as a presidential candidate and considered erasing up to $10,000 per borrower. He recently promised a decision by the end of August. And in Washington, OTC hearing aids expected this fall. Millions of Americans will be able to buy hearing aids without a prescription later this fall, under a long-awaited rule finalized on Tuesday. The Food and Drug Administration said that the new regulation cuts red tape by creating a new class of hearing aids that don't require a medical exam, a prescription, and other specialty evaluations. The devices will be sold online or over-the-counter at pharmacies and other retail stores. The devices are intended for adults with mild to moderate hearing problems. The FDA estimates that almost 30 million adults could potentially benefit from the hearing aids, but only about one-fifth of the people with hearing problems use the devices. The FDA first proposed the rule last year, and it will take effect in mid-October. And now let's take a look at news briefs. Sentencing. Former Rocky Mount Virginia police officer Jacob Fracker, who testified against a friend and a former supervisor. He joined at the Capitol on the 6th of January insurrection, avoided prison time on Tuesday for his role in it. He was sentenced to 1 year of probation with 59 days in home confinement. Recall. General Motors on Tuesday recalled more than 484,000 large SUVs in the U.S. to fix a problem that can cause third-row seatbelts to malfunction. The recall covers Chevrolet Suburbans and Tahoes, Cadillac Escalades, and GMC Yukons from 2021 and 2022 model years. Jill Biden. First Lady Jill Biden tested positive for COVID-19 and had mild symptoms, the White House announced on Tuesday. President Joe Biden continues to test negative after recently recovering from the virus, but will wear a mask indoors for 10 days as a precaution. Election probe. A judge in Colorado on Tuesday ordered Jenna Ellis, a legal advisor for former President Donald Trump's campaign, to travel to Georgia to testify before a special grand jury that's looking into whether Trump and others illegally tried to influence the 2020 election in that state. Amazon Warehouse, backed by the grassroots labor group that secured the first ever union victory of an Amazon warehouse in the U.S., workers of another warehouse filed a petition on Tuesday for an election in upstate New York in the hopes of a similar outcome. And finally, in Asia, Vice Admiral Carl Thomas, the top American naval commander in Asia, criticized on Tuesday what he said were unsafe and provocative actions by Chinese warplanes, reiterating that the U.S. complains about behavior that officials argue could prompt a clash. And in South Carolina, Biden okays landmark bill. Kiowa Island, South Carolina. President Joe Biden signed Democrats' landmark climate change on health care bill into law on Tuesday, delivering what he has called the final piece of his pared-down domestic agenda as he aims to boost his party's standing with voters less than 3 months before the midterm elections. The legislation includes the most substantial federal investment in history to fight climate change, some $375 billion over a decade, and would cap prescription drug costs at $2,000 out of pocket annually for Medicare recipients. It also would help an estimated 13 million Americans who pay for health care insurance by extending subsidies provided during the coronavirus pandemic. The measure is paid for by new taxes on large companies and stepped up IRS enforcement of wealthy individuals and entities, with additional funds going to reduce the federal deficit. The House on Friday approved the measure on a party line 220-207 vote, days after VP Kamala Harris broke a 50-50 tie in the Senate. As our nation continues with its drought issues, here's a story from Arizona. Nevada is seeing water cuts. States, Mexico will get lower share from Colorado River. In Salt Lake City, for the second year in a row, Arizona and Nevada will face cuts in the amount of water they can draw from the Colorado River as the West endures more drought, federal officials announced on Tuesday. The cuts planned for next year will force states to make decisions about where to reduce consumption and whether to prioritize growing cities or agricultural areas. But those reductions represent just a fraction of the potential pain to come for the 40 million Americans in seven states that rely on the river. Because the states failed to respond to a federal ultimatum to figure out how to cut their water use by at least 15%, they could face even deeper cuts that the government has said are needed to prevent reservoirs from falling so low that they can't be pumped. Lake Mead, the nation's largest human-made reservoir, is less than a quarter full and inching dangerously close to a point where not enough water would flow to produce hydropower at the Hoover Dam on the Nevada-Arizona border. The states collectively have not identified and adopted specific actions of sufficient magnitude that would stabilize the system, Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Camille Talton said. She said a 15% to 30% reduction is necessary to ensure that the water deliveries and hydroelectric power production are not disrupted. She was noncommittal Tuesday about whether she planned to impose those cuts unilaterally if the states cannot reach an agreement. She emphasized partnership between federal officials and their counterparts in the seven states and Mexico, but declined to say how much time the states will have to reach the deal she requested in June. The Bureau's inaction has stirred concerns throughout the region about its willingness to act as officials in Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming have been reluctant to propose more draconian water rationing measures or limits on development. Under Tuesday's reductions, Arizona will lose slightly more water than it did this year when 18% of its supply was cut in 2023. It will lose an additional 3% for a total of 21% reduction from its initial allocation. Nevada will lose about 8% of its supply, though that's not expected to have a tangible effect, as the state already has implemented aggressive conservation policies. Mexico will lose 7% of the water it receives. Now let's take a look at some world news. Explosions destroy targets in Crimea. Ukrainians don't claim responsibility for any of the attacks. In Kyiv, Ukraine, explosions and fires ripped through an ammunition depot in Russia, occupied Crimea on Tuesday in the second suspected Ukrainian attack on the peninsula in just over a week, forcing the evacuation of more than 3,000 people. Russia blamed the blasts in the village of Maysakoye on an act of sabotage without naming the perpetrators. Separately, the Russian business newspaper Kommersant quoted residents as saying that plumes of black smoke also rose over an airbase in Crimea. Ukraine stopped short of publicly claiming responsibility for any of the blasts, including those that destroyed 9 Russian planes at another Crimean airbase last week. Russia seized the Crimean Peninsula in 2014 and has used it to launch attacks against Ukraine in the war that began almost 6 months ago. If Ukrainian forces were behind the explosion, that would represent a significant escalation in the war. Such attacks could also indicate that the Ukrainian operatives are able to penetrate deeply into Russian-occupied territory. In another report, act of sabotage, Russia's TASS news agency quoted, the FSB security agency is saying that Ukrainian operatives blew up 6 high-voltage transmission towers earlier this month in Russia's Kursk area close to Ukraine. And now let's go back to Washington. Watchdog declines congressional request. Congressional panel wants Secret Service testimony papers. In Washington, the Homeland Security Department's Inspector General has refused congressional requests for documents and staff testimony about the erasure of Secret Service communications related to the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol, angering top Democrats who accuse him of unlawfully obstructing their investigation. In an August 8 letter disclosed Tuesday, General Inspector Joseph Cafare told the leaders of the House Oversight and Homeland Security Committees that his office will not comply with their requests for internal documents and sit-down interviews due to the ongoing criminal investigation into deleted Secret Service text messages. House Oversight Chair Carolyn Maloney and Homeland Security Chair Benny Thompson sent a letter Tuesday demanding Kafari turn over the documents and make his staff available to lawmakers or risk facing a potential congressional subpoena. Your obstruction of the committee's investigation is unacceptable, and your justifications for this noncompliance appear to reflect a fundamental misunderstanding of Congress's authority and your duties as an inspector general, Maloney and Thompson wrote in the letter. If you continue to refuse to comply with our requests, we will have no choice but to consider alternate measures to ensure your compliance, they wrote. And now let's turn to a section of the paper regarding Congress and its budget. Health climate goals become law. Here are more details about Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. President Joe Biden arrived at the White House promising to build back America. Legislation he signed on Tuesday delivers a slimmer, though not insignificant, version of that once sweeping idea. Approved by the divided Congress, the bill brings the biggest investment ever in the U.S. fight to fight climate change. Also in the legislation is a $2,000 cap on out-of-pocket prescription drug costs for Medicare recipients, as well as new 15% corporate minimum tax to ensure big businesses pay their share, and billions will be left over to pay down federal deficits. All told, the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act may not do much to immediately tame inflationary price hikes, but the package, an election year turnaround after loftier versions collapsed, will touch countless American lives and secure longtime party goals. Democrats alone supported the package as Republicans lined up against it. Republicans deride the 730-page bill as big government overreach and point particular criticism at its $80 billion investment in the IRS to hire new employees and go after tax scoff laws. Voters will be left to sort it out in the November elections when control of Congress will be decided. Not as robust as Biden's initial ideas to rebuild America's public infrastructure and family support systems. Here's what the makeup of the $440 billion in new spending and $300 billion toward easing deficits does. First, you have lower prescription drug costs. Launching a long-sought goal, the bill would allow the Medicare program to negotiate some prescription drug prices with pharmaceutical companies, saving the federal government some $288 billion over the 10-year budget window. The result is expected to lower costs for older adults on medications, including a $2,000 out-of-pocket cap for older adults buying prescriptions from pharmacies. The revenue raised also would be used to provide free vaccinations for seniors who now are among the few not guaranteed free access, according to a summary document. Seniors also would have insulin prices capped at $35 a month, help paying for health insurance. The bill would extend the subsidies provided during the COVID-19 pandemic to help some Americans who buy health insurance on their own. Under earlier pandemic relief, the extra bill was set to expire this year, but the bill would allow the assistance to keep going for three more years, lowering insurance premiums for some 13 million people who are purchasing their own health care policies through the Affordable Care Act. Biggest U.S. investment by far in climate change. The bill also would infuse nearly $375 billion over the decade in climate change fighting strategies that Democrats believe could put the country on a path to cut greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2030 and represent the single biggest climate investment in U.S. history by far. For consumers, that means that tax rebates to buy electric vehicles, $4,000 for used vehicle purchases, and up to $7,500 for new ones eligible to household with incomes of $300,000 or less, for couples or single people with incomes of $150,000 or less. Not all electric vehicles will fully qualify for the tax credits, thanks to requirements that compartment parts be manufactured and assembled in the U.S., and pricier cars costing more than $55,000 and USVs and trucks priced above $80,000 are also excluded. I don't have time to finish the article, but the package will also have extra money to pay down deficits. The thing that is last here in the article says, what's left behind? The package nowhere near the sweeping Build Back Better program Biden once envisioned remains a sizable undertaking, along with COVID-19 relief and the GOP 2017 tax cuts, is among the more substantial bills from Congress in years. And that does it for the reading of the Courier here today, Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. And you are listening to IRIS, which is the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And I am your reader, Peter Welch. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the weather. Get out there and enjoy the weather and the fair today. Bye-bye.